Take a network break, steep a hot cup of tea, visualize the perfect virtual donut, and join us as we sink our teeth into a bountiful buffet of tech news. I'm your host, Drew Conry Murray, and my co-diner is Greg Farrow. We've got a lot of stuff to talk about, but before we do, I want to thank today's sponsors. This episode of Network Break is being brought to you by IT Pro TV. Enhance your technology aptitude. IT Pro TV is the resource to keep your IT skills up to date with engaging and informative video tutorials. For a free 7-day trial and 30% off the life of your account, go to itpro.tv/networkbreak and use the code networkbreak30. This week's show is also sponsored by Nuage Networks from Nokia. These network experts use software-defined networking to make your data center network as efficient and flexible as your compute resources. Don't let your data center network hold back your business. Transform your network and your business with software-defined networking solutions from Nuage Networks, and thanks to our sponsors. Okay, diving right in, the big news of the week was Microsoft's $26 billion acquisition of LinkedIn, which is the business social network. I've been thinking about this acquisition all week, and based on everything that I've been reading about use cases and integrations and how they're going to work together, I still don't get it.
So you've got to remember that LinkedIn ran, what, they had a huge share price hit, 30% drop earlier in the year, like lost $5, $10 billion worth of value.
That's right.
They predicted that my revenue is going to go. I've read lots of different things. One of them is apparently they've been running a $1 billion research and development budget for the last 5 or 10 years.
Hmm.
$1 billion.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Right? And the website looks that bad.
Clearly they weren't putting that billion into a UI.
No, well, apparently they've been working on, you know, a research and development to try and improve the website, but that thing is still a turd.
Mm-hmm.
It's awful. I mean, I used to have the LinkedIn app on my I just recently made an attempt to use LinkedIn more to reach out to the audience because a lot of people are in LinkedIn. And so I put the app on my iPad and on my iPhone and tried to engage more. And the place is a cesspit. It's just people retweeting rubbish and garbage and like the signal to noise ratio. There's so much noise. You just can't, you know. And it's like everybody who's employed by some company is just blindly repeating the stuff that comes from their employer. Mm-hmm. Like, I get the fact that you – but you're not telling me anything that's not already known. You're not adding to the discussion. You're right. Just, you know, I'm a good employee. I did my bit. Please pay me.
You know? Please don't fire me.
Please don't fire me. You know, it's like, really, if that's all you're going to do, just don't. No, just don't, right? So right. So I get it, you know, and the fact that Microsoft paid a 50% premium on LinkedIn stock price sounds like a lot, but then you've got to realize that Salesforce popped up for a bit, apparently.
Right. We did hear that Salesforce came in after Microsoft and LinkedIn had started talking. Apparently, Microsoft was able to just put cash on the table, whereas Salesforce was going to have to put together some debt and some tricky financing. So clearly, Microsoft was the winner here.
Cash wins. Microsoft's got lots of it.
Yes, they do. Apparently, $100 billion.
Yes.
Cash reserve just hanging around.
Yeah, well, you know, we do already know that Cisco's got $60 billion offshore, and Apple's got like 200 or 300 billion sitting offshore. Anyway, so forget that. That's a different sort of thing. So you don't think there's any? You can't see anything in it?
You know, so people talk about, okay, so Microsoft gets a recruiting application. They get a trove of data about, you know, business community. And yes, Microsoft is about selling business applications. LinkedIn is a business network. So, you know, there's a little bit of synergy there, even though I hate that word. But $26 billion. Think of all the other things Microsoft could have done with $26 billion. So I also hear them talking about, you know, they're going to like, oh, when I'm in Office or I'm in Link, then someone will surface up a contact that I have in, you know, LinkedIn that's going to help me do a project better, whatever, which just sounds intrusive and spammy and gross. So, and again, not worth $26 billion.
So I think there's the obvious part here is that Microsoft gets a social platform, and now they can start to think about competing with Facebook and Twitter and, you know, a messaging platform. So if you now have a messaging platform that's based on LinkedIn, then they can start to try and compete with Snapchat and iMessage. Right, like in terms of a business messaging platform, Slack is winning everywhere.
Yes,
and Microsoft has to come up with a competitive strategy. It, you know, Skype sort of was that, but they don't seem to have made it.
Well, they've also got Yammer, which is an internal collaboration app like Slack.
Yes,
maybe that's not doing it.
Yeah, we need a business collaboration or a business messaging app at least, where all the businesses can subscribe to. So, like, you know, today companies are doing it internally. They're using Cisco's Spark project, or they're using Microsoft Messenger, or they're using Yahoo Messenger, or they're using their own proprietary messaging, you know, whatever it is. There's dozens of them, but none of them link up. What we really need is a messaging app that business can use to talk to other businesses. So if two companies are working together, it's sales to sale, chat is where it's going to be, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that Microsoft needs to be focusing on the 9 to 5, right? There's multiple personas that a person has. There's the one that you project on Tinder, maybe, if you're a Tinder person.
Sure. That would be markedly different from your LinkedIn profile.
That might be. And then there's another one that you put onto Facebook for mm-hmm. your family. Mm-hmm. And then there's another one that you put onto Snapchat or Instagram for your friends. They're all projected images of yourself. So what Microsoft just bought is the 9 to 5 persona, the preeminent social network for the corporate offices of the world, or especially in the first world, right?
Yeah. Yep.
So what can I do with that? I can put LinkedIn data into my emails. So when I send you an email, let's say I'm a salesperson or a business manager, and I want to know something, do some background research about the person I'm communicating with, I can click a button now in Microsoft Office and see their LinkedIn profile,
mm-hmm.
which is not all that great. But I read an article the other day published on LinkedIn about how that's exactly what salespeople do already today. When they're going to make a sales call to you, they go and hit up your LinkedIn profile by default.
Sure.
That's the basic stuff. And it's so successful at increasing sales revenue. They're talking it's like a $50 billion growth in market for sales money type stuff, right? Uh-huh. So there's that. And then, of course, there's the obvious one, which is about data for machine learning and artificial intelligence. So, you know, that's one thing. I think you're also going to see LinkedIn as an identity management solution. So today, Facebook is your identity management. Everybody's using Facebook logins to get to stuff. Microsoft needs to be what Microsoft Live was supposed to be. You were supposed to lock into everything with Microsoft Live, another failed Microsoft initiative. Maybe they can have another go with LinkedIn, mm-hmm, right?
Mm-hmm.
Don't forget that they can put the Bing ad network. You know that Bing's got an ad network?
Sure.
Right? So get some ads into LinkedIn and start to get some more revenue out of the Bing ad network. don't forget they get SlideShare. Do you ever use SlideShare.net?
No.
That's been going bad downhill since LinkedIn bought it a couple of years ago. It's a place where you can go and put your PDFs. It used to be great when I could download the PDFs and save them on my machine, but now they don't let you download the PDFs by default, and that's deeply annoying because what I want to do is be able to save them for future reference, but you can't. They have to exist on the web so that they can spam you with stuff. And they also own Lynda Training, right? LinkedIn owns Lynda Training.
Right.
So if you think now that you're part of your Office 365 subscription could include a document sharing engine, SlideShare, for the public, as well as private sharing internally, plus you click a button and your Lynda Training for your Microsoft Office suddenly comes into it. And now you've got a professional messaging platform that can go between companies, maybe cooperating with Link/Skype for Business.
Mm-hmm.
You might start to have something that's worth $26 billion.
You know, I can see some linkages here. I can see some connections why they might be able to make it fit. Again, though, $26 billion, whoever convinced Satya Nadella to pay that, I hope they're getting a nice chunk of it because they must have done a wonderful BS spinning job. That's
probably. So there's one last thing here. One thing that I think is really, really key is that this is a shift that I think there's a substantial tectonic shift going on at Microsoft, whereas up until now, Microsoft has focused on selling to enterprise IT or literally to the CIO.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a sign that Microsoft is shifting to personal tools. So they're shifting to providing tools for people, your professional tools, and that is its core audience of 9 to 5 people, the office workers of the world, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're not selling anymore to the CIO. What they're saying is if I give the tools to these people, this is what Apple does, right? They provide the tools that people actually want to own, and that forces the CIO to go to be taken out of the buying cycle.
Right.
Right? And now Microsoft has – and that means that there's no gatekeepers. That means there's a different way of cost of sales, different type of selling model. And if you can get embedded with – keep Microsoft Office locked into people at a personal relationship between – worker and Microsoft, not IT infrastructure, you know, the CIO and Microsoft, then all of a sudden you've changed the way Microsoft operates and Microsoft Office might not be dead. I think that this is a sign that it's all about, You remember I keep saying how resellers are going to be less important going forward?
Yes.
This is how. This is the shift away from big companies doing business with an owner inside of a corporate. It's going to be big businesses are now going to go straight to the consumer at the end of the market chain, whether it's in retail, in their personal lives, or in their professional lives. And that's a substantial change. And I think that's possibly the most significant signal coming out of this.
All right. Well, I'm going to cap it off by saying, making my own prediction, I don't think this is going to work out well for Microsoft. I think if they were going to make a big splash, they should have just bought Salesforce. I can see much more integration around social and business there than I do with Microsoft and LinkedIn. I'm going to leave it there.
Well, Microsoft has Dynamics, right? It already has a Salesforce competitor that is substantially successful.
True.
So, you know, LinkedIn's going to integrate into that too. You know, click a button in Microsoft Dynamics and you'll get a profile extracted from LinkedIn. God, Lord help us.
Right. If you hated LinkedIn before, you will despise it even more going forward under Microsoft's control.
Yes.
All right, well, we'll leave it there because Microsoft wasn't the only tech company that was doing deals this week. Symantec said it's going to spend $4.65 billion to buy Bluecoat, which makes security gateways a good fit. Symantec is a security company. What's interesting to me is that a private equity firm, Bain Capital, had bought Bluecoat just last year for $2.4 billion. So what the heck did Bain do in the course of a year to suddenly make this company worth $2 billion
more? I have no idea. I went to the Bluecoat website, and what I was thinking was, you know, did Bain buy a couple of other companies and strap them in, you know, like put them on top? But no, Bluecoat pretty much looks like the same company it always was. So maybe it was financially re-engineered or something like that.
Or a lot of people were laid off.
Well, Bluecoat is a really interesting product in that it's very, very deeply embedded in the DMZs of a lot of big companies. It's price is jacked up substantially. They've got WAN acceleration, traffic shapers, as well as security. They've got a bunch of deep inspection products. They're losing relevance as the internet gets more and more encrypted. So, you know, it's a big thing. I guess for Symantec, it does finally turn them into an enterprise company. So one thing that I noticed is that the 62% of Symantec's revenue will now come from enterprise security instead of antivirus, right? Mm-hmm. So antivirus, they still have antivirus and they still sell it, and they have no immediate plans to sell that, what they call the consumer unit, the chief financial officer said, but it's a highly profitable part of the company. Well, you bet it is. They put all effort into that product. That's all gravy. So hopefully this is good for Bluecoat, and hopefully it's good for Symantec. A lot of people have got Bluecoat products in their networks, WAN acceleration, packet shapers and stuff like that. And it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. I don't actually think it's too much of a synergy. I'm not sure that there'll be growth, but, you know, Symantec needs to do something to stay alive, so good for it.
Yep, and also Bluecoat CEO is actually going to take over as the CEO of Symantec. Symantec had some personnel changes at the top recently, and Bain gets a seat on Symantec's board. Bain is still going to have some controlling interest in the company going forward. Some other acquisition news, VMware bought a small company called Arkin. Arkin provides, I guess, an additional layer of visibility, particularly into VMware's NSX, so it can help you monitor, manage the virtual firewalls and segmentation policies inside NSX. Arkin's eventually going to become a module in the vRealize suite. The term of the deal wasn't disclosed. I don't know how much VMware spent. I don't think it was all that much, particularly compared with the numbers we've been bouncing around this morning.
Yeah, we're talking tens of millions, not billions.
That's right.
Probably. Arkin is a great product. I've seen it several times. I've seen it grow from over the last 3 or 4 years from something that was quite unique and specific. And they made a very conscious decision to attach to VMware NSX as a sort of an orchestration tool. And the way that VMware positions it in their blog post is that it's very much about two things, visibility and planning. And I think that's a very powerful combination in that Arkin is able to take a map of what NSX looks like and have a look at what the underlay. So what the NSX is doing in the overlay, ArkinNet is able to map what's happening in the underlay so that you can start to see where things are moving over what switch and what VLANs. And that deepens that visibility into the abstraction.
Absolutely. And when you've also got micro-segmentation, when you've got hundreds, perhaps even thousands of virtual firewalls with all their rule sets, Arkin's product helps you visualize all that, figure out what policies you've got in place and are they actually working. I think that's very useful when you're talking about the kind of micro-segmentation you can get into with NSX.
Well, the visibility is key, right? If you can't see what's actually happening in your network, then any amount of planning tool or configuration tool doesn't help you.
Right.
because you're then dependent on a human to have a mental map of the system, and
that's just not possible in a highly virtualized environment.
Well, it's not possible in an enterprise because that always falls down because you have dozens of people mapping some of these things, and you know, or you'll become key man dependent, you know, key person dependent in the system. So once you've got visibility, then you can plan. So the big thing about software-defined networking, as I've said before, isn't that it can do configuration. The big thing is that it also gives us visibility and analytics and telemetry so we can see what's happening in the network probably for the first time ever. Uh-huh. And so that visibility into mapping between the underlay and the overlay, the tight integration with NSX so that you can see something and then do operational planning like configure this, configure that, do this, do that. So very good.
All right.
Good. Well done, I think.
Yeah.
Give them a cookie.
There you go. So we've got a little bit more acquisition news to get to, but before we do that, you had spotted this story. If folks have been following the Panama Papers saga, that was a law firm where they breached some papers that talked about some perhaps not illegal, but certainly bad-looking financial fun and games that were going on. And now I guess an IT worker at the law firm Mossack Fonseca has been arrested.
Yeah, this is an article in The Guardian. An IT employee at Mossack Fonseca, who doesn't live in Portugal or Panama, who actually lives in Switzerland, believe it or not, has been arrested. And the article says it's not necessarily related to the actual person who stole it. But my guess is, and this is what happens with a lot of companies, is when there's a breach, when there's something goes wrong, people start looking for someone to blame. Mm-hmm. And if you've got some sort of, you know, let's say this person was taking data home to work on it, was a programmer, or maybe they did a backup for some reason, and then all of a sudden someone steals data and you're discovered with having something on your laptop or whatever, then suddenly deep trouble happens.
Yes.
So the point here is that if you're, as a person who works in IT infrastructure, you've got to be really careful to be make sure that your butt is protected, because what looks perfectly legitimate and ordinary when there's nothing else going on, if something like this happens, like a breach happens, and you're caught going around procedures or policy, then you can actually be in deep too. So keep that in mind. I suspect this person has just been doing something that's just not approved, or nobody really knew about, or wasn't approved, you know, part of policy. And in the light of data being stolen, they're just going to throw the rule book at him for no apparent reason.
So. Okay, we'll have the link to that story if you want to go check it out. And it is good advice to always cover your butt.
Preferably with armor plating.
All right, a quick break for our sponsor, IT Pro TV. IT Pro TV gives you access to the most important tools you need to prepare for your IT certification. And Greg, you want to tell us a little bit more about it?
Yeah, IT Pro TV is a training site. So if you want to catch over 1,000 hours of up-to-date, high-quality video content, you can head over to itpro.tv and get access to streamed courses on demand to your favorite mobile device. Now, as I joke, that you might actually want to watch them in the toilet, but don't watch them in the car or on a bike. Course topics include CompTIA, Advanced Security Practitioner. So if you want to support some of your certification goals, but as I've said before, it's not just about following a certification path. Get backgrounded, be wider, right? It's a big opportunity for you to master tools like Metasploit and cryptography and virtualization, and just go and sit down and watch these videos for a couple of hours every weekend and understand a wider pathway to success. It's one low monthly subscription price. There's a no-hassle cancellation policy, and there's corporate pricing available. Go and get the boss to pay for it.
So check out itpro.tv/networkbreak to upgrade your brain with the most popular IT certifications. Premium subscriptions are normally $57 a month or $570 a year, but there's a special offer for Packet Pushers listeners. You can try it free for 7 days when you sign up using the code NETWORKBREAK30, and you can check out their courses, live streams, and more. You'll also receive 30% off the lifetime of your account, so that's less than $40 per month or $399 for the entire year. Thanks, IT Pro TV, for being a sponsor. Okay, back to the acquisition rounds. One more acquisition. Chipmaker Cavium is announcing it's acquiring QLogic for $1.36 billion. QLogic builds Ethernet and converged NICs and host bus adapters.
Yeah, so QLogic is the missing piece of the fiber channel. So while Brocade and Cisco continue to make the switches, it's the fiber channel NICs that they make. And so QLogic has been making Ethernet and fiber channel links for some time. And it's also got some an OEM business selling fiber channel products, if I remember right. Yeah. fiber channel switches and fiber channel adapters and Ethernet adapters, mainly focused on the storage market. This is being acquired by Cavium. Cavium is a company that's been a silicon manufacturer. Obviously, Broadcom and Avago merged a couple of months back in a $40, $60, $50 billion acquisition, one of the biggest things ever. It's been successful. And the silicon game is about scale. Cavium is buying up other companies to try and build itself up to scale to achieve size, and so it can do the investments in building plant and things like that. Entirely predictable. But what's perhaps the most interesting is that the market has responded quite negatively, and Cavium's share price has fallen by 18%. And no one seems to know why. So the financial articles I've read said, why is Cavium falling 18%? This makes no sense. They have cash flow. You know, they haven't made a profit in a long time, but that's fine because they're growing, you know, blah, blah. Why fall 20%? You know, it's like, I don't know.
My experience is that the company that usually does the acquisition, their price tends to take a small hit, their stock price, because I think shareholders are always uncomfortable when you're releasing $1 billion or more dollars from your pockets. But 18% or 20% seems like a lot.
Yeah, it's a substantial drop in share valuation. So I would suspect that because most of QLogic's money comes from Fibre Channel rather than their Ethernet portfolio, people are saying, why are you buying a legacy
product?
Fibre
Channel is a sort of legacy shrinking market.
Yeah, it's a stable, mature, non-growth, but shrinking faster than people expected market. That's part of Brocade's problems at the moment, of course. So we'll see.
All right, keep an eye on that. Cisco has announced a new product called Tetration Analytics. Essentially, it's a big full rack appliance for collecting flow data, providing data center visibility. Cisco says it can process millions of flows per second and store hundreds or billions of records.
So very exciting idea. The idea that you can use, finally, that Cisco is going to do something with NetFlow, the technology that it invented and then has hated for 20 years. So this is really interesting, right? It just sort of said to everybody else, we've done NetFlow, go and make something of it. And a couple of times they've tried to make some NetFlow software over the years and really haven't, you know, their heart wasn't in it, if you know what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. I think, first of all, so the technology is it's a rack. So it's a 39 rack units of hardware. Cisco can't get away from hardware, can
they? No, they cannot.
Just can't. I spoke to somebody, and he said that he believes that it's going to cost about $3 million for a single install. Oof. It's going to take 23 kilowatts or 20 to 25. I believe it's 23, but let's say 20 to 25 kilowatts of power for 39 rack units of hardware. Uh-huh. Plus, you're going to need to buy a bunch of custom silicon Nexus switches to get the full value. So you can't have your existing switches, although it can use NetFlow of your existing switches, but if you want the real value, you're going to have to throw out all your existing switches and put in these ones with the custom silicon in them.
So, yeah, there's two specific Nexus 9K switches. It's the 92160 YCX and the 93180 YCEX that will work out of the box with Tetration so far.
Yeah, and in some documentation it's two, and in other ones there's three, and another some there's four. So obviously,
okay, so they got to get there.
As I went around the Tetration stuff, it was like, yeah, the data's not, you know, maybe the product managers were having a bad day putting it onto the website. There is some speculation that the software that's on behind this comes from the LandCope acquisition. So about, I can't actually get a date on when LandCope was acquired. It was a while ago. Could be a couple of years, but LandCope was a security system that took flow data from networks.
That's right.
For SIEM stuff. And Cisco acquired that a while back, and the speculation is that that's this. Couple of things I also noticed about this was the idea of being able to capture flows and then play back everything in your data center is pretty awesome.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
What a dream come true. You can do anomaly detection. Obviously, there's tools out there that, you know, we put them in the network themselves today, like various tools that we've had featured on the show. I can't bring their names to mind right now. But, you know, that's the same sort of thing. If you're capturing every packet as a flow record, then you could start to do an amazing stuff associated with that if you've got the hardware. So I was talking to somebody. I think perhaps what's most noticeable is that nobody in Silicon Valley knew this was coming.
That's pretty good.
So there was when I asked around some contacts in Silicon Valley, they sort of said nobody in this market who's been doing analytics and machine learning and stuff had heard that Cisco was pushing this product. So this was a completely stealth project. Uh-huh. Nobody knew about it. The second thing is Chuck Robbins did the launch. When was the last time you saw John Chambers get up to launch a product?
I don't know.
I think it might have been ACI.
Mm-hmm.
So 3 years. I wonder if we're starting to see that Chuck Robbins is getting up to be the face. Like up until now, he sort of sat in the background and made some changes and stuff,
mm-hmm.
and let the company sort of. But I wonder if Cisco's decided that we have to have the CEO as a presidential figure, as a figurehead,
mm-hmm.
and a bit like Apple, you know, like Tim Cook gets up on stage to do the keynotes for Apple.
Right, right. Fearless last leader. Week.
Fearless leader, and I'm the face of the company and all that. I just wonder if Cisco's going to do that. If we get a couple of more presentations where Chuck Robbins is there, then we might be seeing a bit more of a consumer-friendly Cisco, like something where we put on a bit of a show, give it a bit of a pizzazz.
It's also interesting given the changes with the MPLS folks who just sort of left the company fairly unceremoniously that Cisco's rolling out a new and somewhat innovative product here.
Yeah, but those people left under a big cloud. Apparently, the story goes that Chuck Robbins went to Sonny Giandami and said, yes, you can stay. You can head up the NCME business unit, but you've got to take on the entire data center business unit. You've got to be responsible for the entire thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when she left. And as we've said, we've often speculated that ACI has actually been successful to the cost or the detriment of the other parts of the data center business.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's a signal that that was true, perhaps.
Yeah, could be.
Could be, you know, like when you're making money by, you know, stripping sales out of other business units, and then all of a sudden you're responsible for those business units, that's going to be a tough ask, especially when you've probably upset them all.
Right, right.
Over the last 4 years as you got your product off the ground and stole their best stuff and stole their best customers and, you know, stole their revenue and their bonuses, you know.
That's right. That would be a hard environment to work in.
Yeah, that'd be a tough ask. But anyway, so, you know, Chuck Robbins seems to be pretty much starting to stamp his face on Cisco, and I think this is the first sign he's come up with a big product. I think the product's quite exciting, but I don't think it's for ordinary people. I think this is for a certain type of customer who probably governments, hypersecurity, but, you know, 3 million, 39 RU, 23 kilowatts, that's
that's a big bite, yeah.
Well, you know, if you're talking about collecting every flow in a data center for 90 days, you're talking petabytes of data.
Right.
Right. So you've either got to, and if you're saying, they're claiming in the thing that they're going to be able to replay every single session, well, you've got to have all that data there so that you can draw it down. So you've got a store somewhere.
Right.
So where's the storage engine? You know, what's the storage engine look like on this? Is it, you know, is it one of that that software storage engine that they got recently? Maybe we'll see that come around.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to sort of pull back the details. This just came out the day before we record this show, so we haven't had a chance to really drill in. But we'll try to peel back the covers and find out what's inside.
I was supposed to watch the webinar, but unfortunately the webinar uses some weird webinar platform, and it didn't work on my Mac because I don't have Flash. And it had 25 separate privacy breaching tracking cookies in it. So even when I did get it working, the privacy software that I have just went bang, 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 bang. And there's 25 of them. It was just like, here's all your personal data. Give it to everybody. So I didn't actually watch the launch video. I had to make it up later on.
So, well, we'll see if we can get some non-tracking white papers and stuff to look at
later. If somebody from Cisco's listening, they could sort of, you know.
Yeah, tame it down. Turn it down.
Tame it down. Let's try and get some simpler software that actually works on normal computers.
All right, well, we're going to stick with Cisco because the networking giant was part of Apple's festivities at the Worldwide Developer Conference. The two companies are pairing up to enable Apple phones that are running iOS 10 to integrate with Spark, Cisco's cloud collaboration effort.
Yeah, very exciting move. I think I tweeted this week saying that it's very interesting to see this consumer push. So this, again, is another one of these. Cisco wants to get to the consumer, wants to get to the person. Right. So not about selling to the CIO. It's about putting something that the person can use. So when the person so that when I go to a company, I say, I'm used to using an iPhone and I want my software on that iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I'm saying?
So absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is this personal aspect of big companies want to get directly to the consumer and take the people who live in the buying chain who normally were the cutouts. They're gone. Those, you know, they're moving around those people. They're still included, but they're not the key thing. So it's fast-tracking the enterprise. It's basically about putting the Spark app so they can make VoIP calls from you're using your Apple contacts list within the app. And, of course, Spark can be part of your corporate system. And it's also combined with a previous, I think it was about 6 months ago, they at Cisco and Apple announced a tie-up for their Wi-Fi system. And the Apple wireless now has some sort of beneficial arrangement on Cisco Wireless networking. I'm not sure which version of wireless networking. Remember, there's three. There's Meraki, and then there's Cisco Enterprise, and there's two wireless systems within Cisco. So just need to be careful to make sure that you're getting the right wireless backbone and that has the features in the Apple wireless are using. So you'll need to go and do some background research there. And there seems to be a lot of talk about collaboration, and this is how Cisco wants to get to Apple's customers, and Apple wants to get into the enterprise. So.
Yeah, Apple wants to make itself a little bit friendlier to the enterprise because BYOD was sort of Apple's backdoor into corporate offices. So by working with Cisco, which is, you know, sort of the corporate giant, you know, they get that their devices become a friendlier beast inside corporate environments where you've got to do some policy and management and control. And then Cisco can take some of that Apple coolness and rub it all over itself and be like, hey, look at us. We're with Apple.
Well, it also keeps the Cisco Spark project alive. I mean, Slack's got voice calling inside of Slack now.
Right. And Microsoft with Link is doing pretty well on the collaboration front.
Well, I can tell you now that the Slack voice calling is better than Skype.
Mm.
You know, we've been using it internally. I've been using it to talk to Ethan, and it's far superior to Skype voice calls. And we'll probably start looking to record podcasts using Slack in the near future.
Ooh, nice.
Instead of using this Skype stuff because it's just becoming painful.
It is getting a little more painful.
Every day it's
every update is a little harder.
Yeah.
All right. Well done, Apple and Cisco. And we still have yet more news. It's been such a busy week, but we also have one more sponsor to tell you about. I want to tell you a little bit more about software-defined networking or SDN solutions from Nuage Networks. With a Nuage Networks SDN solution, your data center network can keep pace with your business. You have agility, automation, security, and scale. That's everything you needed to drive a modern data center. You can use automation that's based on policies and templates to accelerate cloud deployments and provide on-demand service delivery. You can also scale up to meet the demands of thousands of tenants with unique application requirements and unique security policies and commit to service levels. You can apply granular security policies in an intelligent, consistent, and reliable way across the entire cloud. Nuage Networks makes it easy to move to SDN. Their solutions hide the complexity of the underlying physical network so your IT administrators can focus on service delivery instead of equipment constraints. So make your data center network as responsive as your business needs to be. You can find out more about the concrete benefits of network virtualization at nuagenetworks.net and join the cloud conversation on Twitter using @NuageNetworks. And thanks, Nuage, for being a sponsor. Okay, even more interesting news. Avaya Networks is announcing that it's making its VSP network operating system available as a standalone OS for white box switches.
Way cool, right?
That is cool. I mean, the disaggregation trend continues.
It is. You know, remember when everybody said, oh, white box, it's junk. Nobody will ever use it. Operating systems. You know, the companies are never going to disaggregate their operating systems. So I've just got a big nah for you.
That's right.
Right. So we're seeing this continuing of the disaggregation. People want to buy operating systems for white box. You know, Hewlett Packard's been down this path with their, you know, halfway down the path. Now Avaya, we've got Peak 8, we've got dozens. And I actually have a page on the virtual toolbox. So if you go to packetpushers.net/virtual-toolbox, you'll find a gathering of tools where I try to put things together, and one of them is a list of all network operating systems, and I've added this to it. So you can see a list of all the different operating systems that you can buy and which ones are disaggregated and which ones are what I call closed stack. That is, you buy them a closed operating system on a closed piece of hardware and you buy them full service, you know, turnkey, if you like.
Right. And just some notes, it's not a free-for-all right now. Avaya is right now just partnering with a company called Delta Networks. That's a Taiwanese ODM. They're going to be the ones offering the switch hardware to run VSP. Avaya says plans are in the works to support other manufacturers in the future, but they feel like they want to do some testing and integration to make sure that, you know, even if everybody's running on Broadcom, there are still bits and tricks that have to be done to make the operating system work efficiently. Also note that this isn't really an enterprise play just yet. They're targeting service providers and system integrators who have the desire and the operational capacity to run a disaggregated environment.
So this is a significant change to the way you do your support and your operations. In the past, you've always known that your software runs on your hardware so you can test it. Mm-hmm. So this is a way to ease into these things, is to say, I'll do a partnership with this company. They're doing white box. Now, keep in mind, too, that other companies like Cumulus and Big Switch, they run their software on certain switches that they've tested and approved.
That's right.
Right? So this is no different. There will be a time eventually in the years to come where, just like an x86 server, your software runs on every x86 server. It doesn't have to be specially blessed.
That's
or
right.
Even though VMware does, you know, for some reason. but you know, whatever. You know, it's on our supported hardware list.
Right.
You know, especially blessed by priests with, you know, oxen and doves, and, you know, burning incense and myrrh, blah, blah, blah.
They slaughtered an ox outside the integration.
Yeah, they could just write their software properly so it would work on any computer. But anyway, so yes, that is the way that you go forward. And you also got to build up your muscle in your support organization to get used to this. So it's going to be an interesting, I'm sure it's going to be hard for them.
And it's also an opportunity for Avaya to, which makes a good product, but I think has struggled, you know, to, because of Cisco folks like that who have most of the market share. Avaya has been sort of a, you know, kind of trying to play catch up a little bit. From all that I've heard, they've got a good product, and this gives them an opportunity to maybe get this product in more people's hands and make it more easier for folks to consume.
So they're the premier vendor of shortest path bridging solutions,
yes.
Which for service providers is just fantastic. There's so many great features in there for that market that shortest path bridging does. And I could entirely understand that Avaya's customers are saying, we want it on lower cost hardware. We're willing to take the risks there. We want to use, you know, other people's SFPs, blah, 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 manage our costs. We've got to follow the trend. Give us your operating system, though. We want that. Mm-hmm. So, and they're sort of being forced to it, I imagine.
That's right. And talking about the way that the switching market is going to develop, there is a startup called Barefoot Networks. It's announced that it's developing a new Ethernet switch chip to compete directly against Broadcom. The chip is closely aligned with P4. You've had Nick McCowan, who's a developer of P4, on the show to talk about it. It's an open source language, provides a programmatic interface so that chips, for chips inside the network equipment, especially switches, and network operators can customize using P4 how the chips actually process packets.
Yeah, so we've known Barefoot has been a sort of a barely well-known in Silicon Valley that it's doing something around silicon and a programmable switching language. Now, as we talked about in the P4 show with Nick McEwen, you need to go and listen to that, right? And it's really important. But the idea is that instead of having a fixed pipeline, you know, packet comes into the network, layer 2, layer 3, layer 4, layer 7, you know, get the packet ready, go into a buffer, and then ship it out the other side. And that's all you ever get in a switch. What P4 says is, why don't you write software and then have a silicon chip which can then rewrite or do anything anywhere in the chip. The idea is that it's a protocol-independent switching architecture. So you're going to pick up frames of packets off the network. You want to do something to them. You want to mark them with COS, put an MPLS tag. But the thing is that because you're programming it, you can now start to write your own MPLS tags. So they talk about this case of creating your own telemetry system, in-band telemetry system. So as a packet comes through the switch, the silicon will actually write a tag that you created. You can write your own type of MPLS tag and inject it into the packet with your own data. Mm-hmm. But not only that, you can start to signal data from the switch. So maybe it went through, say, the tag could say switch 1 and it went out Ethernet 24, but Ethernet 24 interface is running 80% utilization. So you put all that data in a tag and then send it off. But you wrote it, so it's only relevant to you.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Huge, huge opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
If the silicon works – and they can get the scale and they can make it happen, it's going to just change the way our hardware works. Because today, every time you want to have custom silicon from Cisco, you have to go and buy a new switch.
Right.
With this, you can just say, I'm going to reprogram the software up mm-hmm. to the performance levels of the silicon that's inside it.
Or we want to add new protocol support that isn't ready yet from, you know, an established vendor. We can do that ourselves using P4 and a
yes.
chip that will support it.
Yes, that's right. So you can start to do some really – there's just a whole bunch of really interesting things. The chip's called a Tofino, T-O-F-I-N-O. So it's a 6.5 terabit per second, 6,500 gig interfaces or 250 25 gig interfaces. So big, right?
Yeah, very big.
And you can actually start to do like IPv6, IPv4. You could start to build your own IP packet. You know, anything's possible when you've got a programmable data plane. In the same way that the x86 doesn't run, you know, it runs machine language, but it doesn't prevent you from running C or Perl or Python. Mm-hmm. This is where we're headed with this. This is an x86 for networking.
That's right.
It's hugely exciting.
It is exciting. Although right now, again, they're targeting hyperscale companies like Facebook, Google, Amazon, service providers, telcos, because these companies are the ones embracing white boxes, and they're the ones looking for operational flexibility and programmability so they can customize to their heart's delight.
And they, but they've also got the resources to invest in, you know, writing software that can take advantage of this.
That's right.
And then once the hardware's out there on the market, you know, short-term revenue, build a product, get the sales, blah, blah, blah. But in the enterprise space, it'll be interesting to see if there's companies out there who will then start to invest, right, and say, well, we could just start using this Tofino chip instead of a Broadcom Tomahawk or a Jericho.
That's right. Yeah, I assume it will eventually work its way down to the enterprise. But and also, just as another side note, one of Barefoot's founders is Nick McCowan, the person we've been talking about. He's a Stanford professor, also a founder of Nicira, which VMware acquired and turned into NSX. So he's got a track record.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he's also funded another company that came out of stealth this week called SnapRoute, but we'll talk about that next week.
Okay, wow, that's a busy man.
He's in the right place.
Yes, he is. Okay, you pulled out a story. Cisco's investing $15 million in an Israeli storage firm.
Yeah, a company called Elastifile. It's a software storage. I'm not too sure what makes it different from anything else. $15 million is basically pocket change for Cisco. I suspect it's just intelligence gathering about the storage market, or maybe it's backing up its previous purchase on storage. So if that other one fails, it's got a replacement product for it. Mm-hmm. So, but a couple of things. It's also an offshore investment. So again, it's an Israeli company this time that they've invested into. So offshore dollars, free money. But why is Cisco just not going and buying NetApp or SolidFire or one of those? Do you know what I mean?
I do, and I have my opinions on why they're not buying NetApp, but there are plenty of other storage companies that they could pick up and at a very reasonable cost.
Yeah, they're all desperate to get out.
Yeah.
You know, and there's like 40 or 50 of them. You know, surely Cisco could buy a couple of them.
They could have their pick.
Yeah, put them in the pit and let them duke it out.
Two storage companies enter, one storage company leaves.
I'd love to see that.
All right, one more acquisition story from this week. Samsung is acquiring Joyent. Who is Joyent? What are they doing?
Joyent has been one of the earliest of the cloud providers, particularly as a platform as a service. They were the inventors of Node.js, for those of you, using JavaScript as a server-side language. They've always sort of struggled a little bit. They were also the progenitors of Ceph storage engine, if you like, mm-hmm. a bunch of other things. But they've always lacked a sort of a scale, enough money to grow, to get marketing. And they're widely acclaimed as like the smartest people in cloud computing today. They just haven't been able to make a rapidly growing business against Amazon or Google or Facebook and so forth, or Azure. So this is a chance for another chance for Joyent to survive and to grow.
And Samsung, what does this mean? Samsung is going to get into the computing market in terms of, you know, offering PaaS or SaaS or IIS?
Don't know. Doesn't say. It just says we're going to do stuff with Samsung, and now we know we've got lots of money now. We've got a big company behind us. We're going to see where we go.
Okay, I'm going to make a blatant speculation here. We also had talked recently about Samsung and their IoT play. Maybe there's something going on here, providing some kind of back-end compute infrastructure for IoT.
I think, you know, Samsung is one of the big companies. It's, you know, the size of Apple and Microsoft and Google, so why not? Maybe it needs a cloud too.
All right. Maybe they'll buy a social network next. Everybody needs one of those.
Yes, if there's any left.
Okay, our last story. Last week, I had mentioned a news item about a Nevada was testing a passenger-carrying drone. Then I found a story on my Twitter feed about how Larry Page, you know who Larry Page is, has invested more than $100 million in a startup to build flying cars. That is so awesome. Not a lot of details on how much progress he's actually making. And I'm wondering if part of this is like, hey, Elon Musk, electric cars, mine fly. anyway, you know, it's got to be so much fun to be a billionaire and just be like, 100 million? Yeah, let's do it. Let's go for it.
That sounds like fun.
Yeah. And Larry, if you're listening, I'm ready for a pre-order.
I'm sure he's listening.
Of course. All right, that brings us to the end of this marathon show. Greg, if folks haven't heard enough from you, where can they get more?
You can find me on my blog at etherealmind.com, on the Twitter is at etherealmind, and also your favorite social media platform.
I'm Drew Conroy Murray. I blog at packetpusher.net. You can follow me on Twitter at Drew_CM. Thank you to our sponsors, IT Pro TV, and to Nuage Networks from Nokia. If you're looking to transform your data center network with agility and automation, security and scale, visit nuagenetworks.net. And please tell them you heard it on the Packet Pushers podcast. And thank you for joining us for another episode of Network Break. If you enjoy the show, give us a like on Facebook, leave a recommendation on iTunes, or share a link with your colleagues. Please check out our newsletters, Human Infrastructure Magazine, and Link Propagation. You can find all the details at packetpushers.net. Thanks for listening.